All right, welcome everyone to the June 2nd Hyperledger Technical Steering Committee call. As you are all aware, two things that we must abide by. The first is the antitrust policy notice that is currently displayed on the screen. And the second is the code of conduct that is linked in our agenda. So as far as announcements go, we have our standard Dev Weekly developer newsletter that goes out each Friday. If you have anything that you would like included in that, please leave a comment on the wiki page that is linked in the agenda. And then does anybody else have any other announcements that they would like to make? No? Okay. So for quarterly reports, we have the Hyperledger Cello report that came in this week. As far as I could see, we only had the one question that I put in, and Mawa has responded with that, with an answer to that. So I don't see any additional comments, but I also only see that two of us have had a chance to review this. So given that, I will leave this on the agenda for next week so that everybody on the TSC will have a chance to review that particular report. And then the Firefly report is coming due next week. And so we'll look to see that coming in. Any comments on the quarterly reports? No, okay. So as you guys may have seen, I did send a follow-up email to Quilt. Their quarterly report was coming up, I think, next week, or maybe it was this week. And so I sent them an email asking if they wanted to keep the project in a dormant state or move it to end of life. And they responded with that it was probably time to move it to an end of life state. So I created a PR specifically in the Quilt repo, and it was approved by approved and merged by the maintainers. So I just wanted to make sure that we were aware of that and just get a yay nay vote just to confirm that we are moving that to end of life from the TSC. Any comments before we have that vote? Nathan?
Oh, just for the record, the Quilt project came out of the Web Payments Working Group, the W3C, and did a lot of interesting things for identifiers for blockchains that track financial assets. And it has done a lot of interesting thought work that affected what we chose to do with identity, especially when we worked on cross-chain identifier work for the DID specification. So big thanks to everyone who worked on the Quilt project and brought it to its current state. But it hasn't been active for quite some time, as Tracy very well knows. And so it was good to see that folks were around to reply to the pull requests to move to an end-of-life state.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Nathan. As we've said in the past to the other projects that have gone to end-of-life state, obviously thank you for being part of the community to the Hyperledger Quilt folks, if they were to ever listen to this in the future. And thank you for the work that they have done on that project and working towards bringing Interledger to Hyperledger. Any other comments? Okay, Rye, would you just take us through not a roll call vote, but just an approve or abstain type vote?
Sure. Well, there's no motion to vote on, and nobody seconded the non-motion.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
Yeah. For that.
It's so early here. Peter seconded. What do you want first?
I'll make the motion thing as I help approve the pull request.
All right. Thanks, Nathan.
Okay.
I'll second.
So in the matter for the TSC moving Quilt to end of life, is there anyone who wishes to abstain from the vote? Is there anyone that objects or wishes to vote nay? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes by voice vote.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Yep. Thanks for keeping me honest, too. All right. So in the discussion items, I just wanted to call out specifically that we have had two PRs that ended up getting merged into the TSC repo. One to rename CII to OpenSSF, and the other to add the security related mandates for graduation to the incubation extra criteria. So I wanted to see if anybody had any comments here at the TSC about those particular PRs, because I know that they didn't go through a formal vote here, but really just went through the GitHub PR process. So if anybody has any comments, now is probably a good time to have those comments. Okay. So that is, as far as I know, the end of the normal TSC meeting, but if anybody has any other items that we should talk about before we hand it over to Jim, raise your hand and let us know. All right, so Jim, I think it's up to you to work us through the task force on Project Health.
All right, thanks, Tracy. Let me share my screen. Okay, so we didn't have a off-cycle meeting, but we did have a lot of good discussions in the last task force meeting in this TSC time slot. That was in April. So just as a refresher, we went through the all the dimensions that we believe are important to reflect a project's health. And that's in this column. It's in two large categories, focusing on community side or focusing on the code side. On the community side, we had growth as one dimension, and diversity, retention, maturity, friendliness, and responsiveness. On the code side, we had usefulness, production readiness, fundamental metrics, docs, and amount of innovation. For this call, I'd like us to discuss, given these dimensions, what type of data do we think are useful to support them, so we can get some measure from data to reflect on each dimension. Before we dive into that, any questions on any aspect that we discussed last time? So altogether, I see there are 11 of them. No, that's great. Okay, so let's dive in. So I've got a bunch of ideas. So we can go through them, and if you don't think they make sense, we can strike them out. Or if you have additional ideas, then we should add them in. So let me put this in edit. Okay, for project growth, we want this to be reflecting how many people are becoming newly interested in this project, and they're so interested that they start contributing, either in discussing new features, discussing drawbacks, or even contributing code. So I was thinking we can tally the definitely mostly driven by GitHub data, number of contributors to the code base, scraping the PR data and issues data that where people log requirements or just submit a bug report. Don't know if there are specific things we need to look at for both PRs and issues to get real contribution versus you know, casual one-time thing, and then they never came back. I know Tracy did a lot of work in this area to try to use PR and issues data in GitHub to define who are the casual ones, who are the strong contributors, and who are the recurring or repeated contributors. So all that work can be applied here. Also, we want to look at Discord if possible. So here, I think we need to consider technical feasibilities. Is it possible to analyze Discord and see for a particular project, which user, you know, keeps showing up week after week and have sustained discussions? That can be a good indicator of contributors that are mostly contributing ideas in discussions rather than code. So do these make sense for growth?
So Hart has his hand up.
So first of all, a somewhat orthogonal practical question. Where should we be commenting in chat for this discussion? I'm assuming we want to do Discord, but do we want to do it in the TSC chat or the related task force chat?
Let's go ahead and use the task force chat. There's one Tracy created for the health data.
Okay. Yeah, I see it. Great. And secondly, I think this is a great start, Jim. I would also include other things like documentation. You know, are people working on that? And, you know, I guess community outreach. So are people starting to do like meetups? You know, is there, you know, outside evangelism, I guess, however outside evangelism takes place? Thanks.
Can you clarify the meetup, the outside evangelism aspect? You mean people leading, for example, in the particular region, meetups that focus on Firefly?
Recently, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, understood.
Like, are people trying to grow the project, basically?
Yeah.
You know, this is like, you know, just things we know that generally work to help get more contributors. Like, these things, are people doing them?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good one. And I think this will be mostly just asking people, right? And have a place to log them.
Sure. Well, I mean, these should all be logged in our events, right?
That's true.
Not, yeah. They aren't always. I mean, it's certainly people occasionally do things on their own. But whenever people host a meetup or something, you know, we encourage them to tell us, right?
So do you think the outside evangelism is a is data to collect it, or it's just means to an end? Because at the end of the day, it should be reflected in the growth of the contributors in these areas, right?
Well, I think it's a it's a leading factor for those, right? So if I want to be able to, you know, if I want to anticipate how I think growth is going to be in the future, I think looking at that is really important.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. If a project is not getting exposures through these meetups, then we probably should encourage them, because it's as you said, it's a good way to lead up to the appearance of additional contributors.
Yeah. So the earlier stuff is sort of, you know, has the project grown? And like the meetup kind of thing is, will the project grow, basically, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Jim, I think maybe to figure out who the new interested individuals are, if we could do some sort of page view count on the contributing.md file, or if there's a different contributing that's in the document for the particular project, that could be a way of seeing how many people have expressed an interest by looking at the contributing guide instead of just reaching out on Discord or doing a PR. Because that could then tell you how many people end up converting based on somebody goes to the contributing guide, do they actually end up submitting a PR or not?
So the contributor guide, is that in our wiki or is it
So according to our, I don't remember what we call it, but the folder requirements were all, each of the projects is supposed to have a contributing.md file as a initial entry point. Some of those actually have text directly in them, and some of them point to a contributing a file on their read the docs or something like that. So,
yeah.
Obviously that becomes a slightly bigger challenge when you're redirecting to a different page. But I think, you know, we at least have the requirement that everybody has a contributing.md in their repo.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. May be able to collect page views in some of them, may not be possible in others, depending on where they exist. Cool. Anything else on this particular one? I know as a TSC, this is our main interest is the growth of the community. So I think any ideas that we're not thinking, we should talk about them. Okay, so let's move on to diversity. Diversity is also very important. This is fault tolerance, right? When one organization, for whatever reason, goes away, having diversity will keep the project alive. So the number of orgs contributing to the code base, that's probably the most obvious type of data we should collect. Do we have anything else that we should think about?
In the Fabric reports, I usually put percent of commits and contributors from each organization. Well, I usually focus it on IBM because that's by far the most usually. So I'll say like, how much percent is IBM? How much percent is other?
Yep. Thanks, David. That's a good point.
And David Boswell has his hand up as well.
One other form of diversity could be language translations, for example, and how many languages is documentation available in. Although I guess that could also fall under perhaps, you know, friendliness.
Yeah, that's a good one, David.
I think contributing issues is also important. So sort of trying to measure who's contributing to the roadmap, not only who's contributing the code.
So that would be also issues and Discord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But the thing I want to emphasize is that, you know, it's people who are also contributing to the roadmap, not just the code itself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And for the projects that have the RFCs, that could be a good repo to take a look at to see who the contributions are coming from in there.
RFCs or enhancement requests, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I just know a number of our projects have a distinct repo for RFCs. And so for those projects, if only one organization is contributing to that repo, then maybe there's not the diversity for the roadmap that Hart is talking about.
That's a very important aspect. Thanks, Tracy. Yeah, mm-hmm. We actually had, as an example, Firefly had a separate example, repo for Firefly improvement request, Fire. And we've had many opened by other orgs, very significant architecture discussions. That's a good one. Okay, so if that's it for that one, let's move on to retention. So this is about keeping keep attracting the interest of contributors, longevity. So having the contributors that we recorded from those efforts, do they continue to show up month after month, both in PRs and Discord? I guess it's the same type of data, but a different way to analyze them.
We could do something around, so for retention, I previously had in the project reports, the number of people have become inactive in the last month, meaning that they hadn't made a contribution in over 6 months. As well as the kind of number of repeat contributors that you have. Like if somebody's only contributed once, then I think that's, you know, it's good, but it's not what we're looking for. It's somebody who continues to come back and contribute.
Yeah. Okay, let's continue for maturity. So maturity is mainly as we're going through the analysis of these dimensions, maturity should be sort of a qualifier so that maybe on the particular aspect, it should be treated differently for a young project versus a mature project. And maturity is probably a subjective thing that is not directly correlated to age, but we could definitely look at when was the first line of code or first commit was started. That's the start of life. And frequency of releases could reflect the maturity of the project. I don't know if that's We probably can have a discussion about this. The idea was mature projects tend to have more regular cadence, and they usually can do the release on that cadence. Active projects may have faster cadence, but they tend to be more irregular, more on demand. And certainly less active and less mature projects will have less amount of releases. So longer cadence between releases. Does this make sense? Do we think that's a fair way to analyze maturity?
So I know you have your hand up, but it was probably before this question, so.
Oh, no, it was for this question, but thanks, okay. Tracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the frequency of releases is a good metric of maturity. It's not necessarily like, you know, are you releasing every week? But, you know, do you have a schedule and are you roughly adhering to that schedule? So I think that's a great thing, Jim, and I, you know, you should leave it in. On the other hand, I think other things that are great indicators of maturity are documentation. I consider, you know, I don't consider a project mature unless it has, you know, at least reasonable documentation. And finally, like, you know, certain best practices come to mind. Like, I would not consider a project mature, for instance, if it were not following the best security practices. Things like that, right? Security practices are the ones that, you know, come to mind to me, but I'm sure there are others that people could think of and suggest.
It could also include the test coverage, the way any new code gets added or the release process. The definition for somebody to become maintainers from committing single patches.
To automatically calculate test coverage, making sure they're not dropping, that sort of thing.
So since we are looking at so maturity of the project, it would also, a mature project would have, so best practices can span across spectrum. That would include the way they engaged with the community members.
The last part you said, can you repeat that?
Sure. So I was thinking more in terms of following best practices that will have a roadmap for somebody to become a maintainer if they want to start contributing.
Gotcha.
And Nathan?
Arun touches on something that's even more important here, but it's harder, a lot harder to measure. And that is, does the community have some cross-organizational way of organizing their progress? I mean, do they have some sort of roadmap or active and regular discussions on what should and shouldn't be built and when? And I don't know that that's a metric or if it's kind of a pass-fail of, is there such a thing that we can ask or watch for?
You mean is the leaders involving the community in defining the roadmap?
Yeah, like the example here is I show up with really great new idea to improve your project. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? How do I find that out? What's the cross-organizational way of coordinating? Should it go in this sprint or should it go in next quarter?
Yeah, so we have feel like this is somewhat adjacent to friendliness to contributors, but I don't think it's captured anywhere else. I'll leave this in here. That's a good one. Thanks, Nathan. Okay, so let's move on to the next one, friendliness. This is for contributors, potential contributors who have good ideas. Do they feel they are being accommodated and they can have meaningful discussions? So some obvious things is, does the project define good first issues? These are things to help potential contributors get their hands dirty. Just go through the basic practices of doing a build and making a small fix and then propose a PR as easy as possible. When someone has been able to go through this end-to-end, it's much more likely they will contribute more in the future. So that's that should be a really good thing. Can be measured in our new contributors being onboarded week after week. Next one is a bit subjective. Can new ideas be accommodated? Even if they may lead to forking up the code base. This was actually discussed on the last call. Having robust discussions to solve concerns from the community rather than brushing them off, encourage them to create a new fork if this is if this can't be accommodated in the same code base. That reflects, you know, that the core committers really care about those new ideas from new contributors.
Yeah, so I think this is actually really important, and you're touching on a core fact here, Jim. So one of the things that I really like to see is sort of how far out of the way are existing maintainers willing to go to help new contributors. So it's sort of like if a new contributor submits like a flawed issue or a flawed PR, you know, how far are the maintainers willing to go to help them, right? So I will credit Peter as someone who does an excellent job here. When someone comes along to Cactus with something that's not, you know, perfect, Peter will usually go out of his way to help them a lot. And that's really fantastic, and that's really good for the community. So one metric for sort of this, and that's sort of indicative of this is, you know, what's the time to land PRs or commits or issues, but mostly PRs, for sort of core maintainers or core contributors versus new contributors, right? So, you know, are the maintainers, you know, addressing the actions created by new contributors? And I think this is really important. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. So I think we're actually talking about an idea. I don't know if we actually talked about how this will be captured, the type of data that needs to be collected to reflect this.
So I think you could correct, you could collect this, you know, in some way, like, you know, the PR or the issue analytics from new contributors versus existing contributors, right? Now you would expect it to be a little faster for existing contributors than new contributors, but you don't want it to be like galactic for new contributors, right? Where if someone like creates a PR and it's just never looked at, right?
Yeah.
But like PRs closed without comment is another like thing that's, mm-hmm. you know, that I personally discourage.
Yeah. Great.
And then, I guess, sorry.
Jim, I was just going to say, I added the last line to kind of capture what Hart said there. And I also added to the first line, besides good first issues, a help wanted tag. I think if you have help wanted, that implies that you have somebody who's willing to help you in going through the PR process and working through a particular issue together. So I added that to the friendliness as well.
Yeah, saw that. Thanks, Tracy. Yeah, this makes sense.
Arun?
Thanks, Tracy. So I think Hart covered one of the questions that I wanted to ask, that how long a PR would take from a new contributor and how far is the maintainer going to help them out. The second part to that is with respect to taking in inputs from the new contributors or taking in new ideas, right? This topic that Jim also kind of brought up. I know in the past people used to ask questions on Rocket Chart and that used to lead to discussions. And eventually maintainers, if they like it, they would go and add that feature. Or if they don't, they would probably discuss and say, hey, that we are not going to do anything with that. And then we decided that we'll go with raising issues with all the repositories, but I don't think so that's consistently enabled across all projects because some of the projects are still not using GitHub issues as a source for taking in inputs. I know some of them are strictly following it. So I think that's also a measure of friendliness. Of there should be a consistent way where somebody can come in and say this needs to be done and probably start a discussion around that.
So Arun, you're saying is the project defining a clear way for anybody to raise a concern or an idea?
Sure, we can consider that. I know some of the projects may still be preferring an external tool like Jira.
And Hart.
So another thing that I think could be useful for measuring this is sort of are PRs and other issues and things addressed in a somewhat FIFO manner? So, you know, basically like maybe they're not getting merged, but, you know, are people sort of, you know, commenting on and reviewing things in the order that they're coming in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like this, right? So nobody should cut the line because you're a core committer.
I mean, obviously not all PRs are equal, right? You know, if there's like a security fix, it's not the same as you know, an improvement, right? But in general, and some PRs are good and some PRs are, you know, less good, right? But in general, there should be some sort of process of addressing things in order, right?
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. Great ideas. Anything else?
Arun.
Right. So I think since we are talking about friendliness, should we also consider the project meetings? I know all projects are advised to have their own maintainer meeting or maybe committers meeting gatherings that happen at the biweekly or once in a month.
Are there project meetings? Right. This captures your idea, Arun?
Right.
Okay, great.
Nathan?
I just wanted to add to the addressed in order it's not so much about that they're addressed necessarily in chronological order, but there is a defined order and that every organization has fair access to that order. An example of what we've seen in the past where a process is broken is where the primary organization where all the maintainers are set their own internal corporate roadmap and everything for that happens like clockwork on schedule. But anybody who comes with a change from outside of the organization, they have to wait through an undefined other process. So you might see a pull requests get merged in 2 or 3 hours when they're part of that org, but 3 or 4 days if they're outside.
Enjoy, Steve. So Nathan, you're saying there should be a well-defined practice to define how the priority list of issues to be reviewed.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be chronologically. It just has to be fair and, you know, obvious. Meaning if I come with a critical security patch, of course, that might get merged well before, you know, someone's idea to add a new API.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for adding that, Nathan. Shall we move on to the next one? I feel more and more that responsiveness becomes very similar to friendliness. Maybe we should consider merging them, but responsiveness is mainly how quickly things are done, especially in terms of when they come from outside, quote unquote outside. Outside of the core maintainers group. It's very similar to friendliness because when you are responsive, you are demonstrating a friendliness to new contributors. And of course you are responsive to within the core maintainers group because everybody wants to get the right thing done. So shall we go ahead and merge responsiveness and friendliness into a single one?
So I think this is useful to separate. I think Nathan illustrated it really well when he mentioned that there's, you know, there can be a core group of maintainers that are very responsive to each other, but not necessarily responsive to outside contributors.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also seen projects where the maintainers are very slow to respond to each other. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fine to have this as a gotcha. As its own category.
So basically, this is looking across the board, how in general things get done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Let's keep them separate still. So that applies to both PRs and issues in GitHub and also on questions that are not responded to. How do we know if that's even possible to measure? Like, can we tell the difference between somebody making a comment or just a statement versus asking a question in Discord? And if there's no reply, this seems to involve some sort of AI to actually understand if questions in Discord are being addressed or not, right?
Yeah. So Nathan, you had your hand up before that question. I don't know if anybody has a good answer for your question, Jim, but Nathan.
I was going to say, I don't have a good answer to that question. I think you're right. I'm not sure how much you can automate that, though there might be some best practice of how we should acknowledge every post in some way, and we could train the maintainers on that so that it could be measurable. It just, I don't know. I don't have any ideas on how we would do that. The thing I was going to say is I think Jim's comment hit a real important jewel, which was anything that can be measured across everybody who contributes, I think is more of a responsiveness metric than a friendliness metric. And it felt to me like we've added a lot of things to friendliness that might be able to be in responsiveness because we can't measure them on a who's new versus who's established basis, especially when we consider contributors who might only be doing drive-bys on the code, but might be very, very active on the calls or on the email list. So it feels to me like focusing or pushing more of the metrics over to the responsiveness side might give us a more accurate view of what's going on, in at least in the case of like the no special treatment or there's a roadmap in place. Some of those things seem more like fairness or responsiveness as opposed to maybe friendliness to new contributors.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. That we could basically be more objective measuring overall responsiveness. Cool.
So Nathan, I agree with you. I don't think we can get, you know, perfect information on this, but I think we can, you know, cut some of these responsive. We can handle some of these statistics with respect to friendliness by looking at like statistics for maintainers versus statistics for contributors, right? Or statistics by company, right? Because we have all of that information. So while some of these may be difficult, I think it's probably still possible to gather them. And, you know, I know that a lot of this stuff you can do with a couple of clicks in LFX right off the box.
I say to that, yes, that sounds great.
Awesome. Okay. By the way, I see people are actually doing co-editing, so that's great. I know Riot has been encouraging people to do that on the wiki. So let's move on to code and see if we can finish everything on time. Usefulness, is the project being adopted by customers and tie kickers? Are people actually using them? I was actually thinking about this when we were announcing end of life for Quilt. Do we actually know if they are being used by customers? It would be great if we do and say, yeah, it may be end of life, but it's still got strong adoption. It's just not moving forward in terms of features. That's very different than a project that's been in Hyperledger and no one uses it, right? So I'm really curious, how do we get this? So obviously we can ask and have people tell us, how do we do that is the question. Several things we could use. Docker polls. But this can be skewed, you know, if there are, you know, very frequent test runs against particular projects, you're obviously going to get a lot of Docker polls that can skew the metrics, release binary downloads, probably the same idea. And the next one was, I think, idea from David, like we could tag resources that announce the usage of a particular project and have that be tallied in some fashion. And publications, particular project generates. Do we know if it's practical to collect this? And do we want to create some sort of channel for our customers and developers to tell us the projects they're using? maybe we can organize some campaign with David's department to encourage, encourage the world to tell Hyperledger what they are using. Ideas like this. Any thoughts?
David?
I mean, I think we can tap into, this could be an opportunity to work with the SIGs, for example. You know, we can just ask them if we give them a format for how to, as you say, tag things. I mean, we can try to, encourage them to do that. I know that there's a lot of discussions about what's getting used for what, solution in the SIGs level. So I think that's where some of the data lives. And then we have the case study, library too, where that information is available. So those are the thoughts that I had about where we can get this information.
Nathan?
I think we also have to acknowledge that some of the most interesting things we'll never find out about. And this is one of the reasons I really liked the hackathons that happened around the world, because often someone would show up who had not been on our radar at all in any other way. And they were doing something interesting, but they wouldn't have talked to us if they didn't have been kind of a local opportunity to do so. So, I mean, we should make sure when we add this metric, we acknowledge this is what we know about. It's not everything that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for the most part, this is pulling information from the outside world, unless we create some sort of channel and encourage people to do it, we probably will never find out. Okay, so it sounds like the action here is, I guess I'll work with David and Tracy and Hart and see if there are things we could do here. I think it would be great if we can collect this sort of information. It's great marketing material for the Hyperledger brand. All right, cool. I wonder if the certified vendors, right, might be an interesting resource to see what customers from their point of view are using which technologies. Maybe we can reach out to ask them. All right. Okay.
There is a list, there's a distribution list of HCSPs, but the
Danielle, you're not using the correct microphone.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. There is a list for the HCSPs, but the HCSPs are just for Hyperledger Fabric right now. But many of them do work cross projects.
Yeah. Cool, and it'd be okay for us to contact them to ask these sorts of questions, right, Danielle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
We've
awesome. That's great. So let's move on to the next one. By the way, anybody is welcome to make additional edits after the call. So we only have 4 minutes left. Production readiness. We want to see if it's already passed 1.0. What's the test coverage of the code base? Do they publish performance and reliability testing data? Is the user documentation of high quality? Anything else for this part?
Bobby?
Yeah, I just wanted to supply, if we run out of time, that the Learning Materials Working Group is currently creating a badging system for documentation to move from incubation to graduated status. You must have all the pieces And we're working on that to present to the TSC in the near future.
That would be a great thing to do. We would love to have a sort of a standard view to the quality of documentation. That it's very important. Thanks. Thanks for the working group for doing that.
And Jim, just because Dano's not here, he had the last term for the TC suggested a badging proposal, but it never made progress. We might want to go revisit that as we look at matching it up with what we're doing here with the Project Health to see if there's any additional sort of items that were included in that badging proposal that we should be including here.
Yeah, I'd be all for helping with that, because I know from our own experience with Firefly, the team can definitely use help on what's the best way to write effective documentation, right? So this will be also very valuable to the projects, because as developers, we know how to write good code, not necessarily write documentation, and it can make a huge difference. Awesome. So sorry, this is taking longer than expected. So I think we have to stop now. I'll try to organize a off-cycle meeting to continue to finish those metrics. And again, everybody is welcome to do more edits and add your thoughts there. Thanks a lot for all the great discussions, and back to you, Tracy.
All right, thanks, Jim. Yeah, so as Jim mentioned, feel free to edit this document, add additional items or commentary to it. He's capturing it under the task force section. There's the Project Health task force, and he's got some meeting notes. So feel free to edit that and get your comments available. And with that, I'm going to close the meeting for today. Thank you all for joining, and we will see you again next week.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thanks, Fizzy. See you, everybody. Thanks.